Well, they have done it. They've cloned a sheep. Joey Chen was so absolutely ecstatic this morning on CNN as she was interviewing a rabbi, a Catholic priest, and apparently an educator in a theological institution, perhaps the theological school of a major university. She went so far as to say, "Do you suppose Jesus might have been a clone?" The media has been going crazy for the better part of a week because allegedly they have cloned a sheep. I don't know what comes into the minds of most people when they hear this announcement over the media. Do they actually think that some British scientist took a picture of a sheep and then perhaps put the photograph in a machine and turned it on and poof, out came another sheep? Do they think that the sheep which is standing there is a female sheep has been duplicated or replicated, that they're absolutely identical? In other words, if they were human beings, would they even have the same fingerprints? Do they have the same livers, the same kidneys, the same hearts, the same circulatory system, the same bone marrow, the same hoofs? Are they absolutely identical in every regard? So the media would lead you to believe, wouldn't they? What about this business of cloning? Thanks to Darren for getting me a whole bunch of articles. I only brought about three of them with me, and I couldn't begin to take the time to read them all because the media is going crazy with the subject of cloning. I have them here from Reuters, New York Times, and from all over the place that were pulled off the internet. What does it mean to clone? Many people apparently think it means to somehow magically replicate or duplicate so that the two creatures, beings, plants, animals, humans, that are standing there in front of you are absolutely identical in every respect. The word clone means, quote, a group of cultivated plants that have been propagated vegetatively from a single ancestral plant. That is one stalk of corn that is used to propagate thousands of stalks of corn. Biological, any group of individuals produced asexually from a single ancestor. So I think many people believe that clones would be like zombies. I've actually heard some of the media in their incredible hype that they have been involved in for the past week, perhaps 10 days, wondering whether or not a man like Saddam Hussein could clone an entire army. They're wondering whether or not we can conquer every disease, that we could actually clone people and then we could use, or we could clone animals like pigs and sheep, and we could use their vital organs and transplant them into humans. But I think the ultimate blasphemy was what I heard this morning. Do you think Jesus was a clone? Ah, let us bow down, they seem to say, before science. Science is God. Science can do anything. There is nothing that can be withheld from science. They have split the atom. They have given us long lives and health. They give us cradle-to-the-grave security. There isn't anything that science cannot do because science is, as many people seem to think, God. They are wondering now whether eternal life might be possible. For quite a while, there have been people occupying space in deep freeze refrigerators somewhere that have been frozen almost instantly into a cube of ice because they were about to die, or when they died, they wanted to be frozen so that at some point in time they can be thawed out and there they will be again. People actually believe that. Let me give you a little bit of what one of the articles said from the New York Times Service in a feat that may be one bit of genetic engineering that has been anticipated and dreaded more than any other. Researchers in Britain are reporting that they have cloned an adult mammal for the first time. What's that mean? Cloned an adult mammal. Suddenly, there were two adults. Is that what it means? It's what it seems to say. There was an adult. They cloned an adult. Wow. How did they do that? The group headed by Dr. Ian Wilmot, a 52-year-old embryologist at the Rosalind Institute in Edinburgh, has created a lamb. Created a lamb. Utter lie. Absolutely untrue. Created a lamb, says Gina Coletta, the New York Times Service. He created. He's the creator. Brought into being a mature adult Oh, no, no, wait. Oh, I'm sorry. Oh, wait, there was something I missed there. Then it wasn't two adults. But it said in the previous paragraph, they have cloned an adult mammal for the first time. And then in the next paragraph, it says, he created a lamb. Well, which was it? Was it an adult or was it a lamb? He goes on to say it was a lamb. Using DNA from an adult sheep. There's a lot about DNA. They said before one of the most infamous trials of the century, probably will go down in history as being the most famous or infamous, whichever way you want to look at it, trial of the century, that DNA, because it has such an absolute genetic pattern, is like one out of millions chance of it being in error. And they absolutely proved that the DNA belonged to an alleged criminal who took the lives of two people very brutally by virtually decapitating one of them and stabbing repeatedly another one. But it didn't work because it was not really accepted as the final bit of evidence that was necessary. DNA means deoxyribonucleic acid. Deoxy means two oxygenated or two oxygen molecules of a ribonucleic acid. All cells have a nucleus. A cell is like this room. It has walls, and then there is the protoplasm, and there is a nucleus. Don't be impressed by the word nucleus. The word nucleus comes from a Latin word. It merely means nut. So what it really means is a nut-like object in the middle of the thing. But they like to use scientific words, mostly Greek words, because that impresses us. And laymen, when they see Greek and all these other languages, are very, very impressed. So deoxyribonucleic acid really is an acid found in the nucleus of a cell, which is a ribbon-like form when it's viewed under an electron microscope. And it has a pattern in it. And in every cell of your body, from your earlobes to the tip of your nose to the tip of your toes, is, in those cells, deoxyribonucleic acid. And what do you suppose that acid contains, that little ribbon-like, spiral-like acid in the nucleus of each one of your cells? It contains a genetic pattern. That is why that two parents can produce a child who looks like both of them or has certain features and characteristics that you can see where the father predominates or the mother predominates. That's why such things as identical and fraternal twins and triplets and quadruplets and quintuplets and so on are possible in the human species, because there is a genetic code. Now, normally we know that that genetic code is only passed on through one method. It is passed on by the method of the production of spermatozoa. And how are they produced? They are produced in cellular molecular construction in the testes of a human animal, whether it's a bull or a ram or a human male. And they come from every part of the body from that deoxyribonucleic acid. And they have a genetic code. So that genetic code passed on into the cells that produce the spermatozoa actually contain things such as whether you've got long earlobes or short, whether you're brown-eyed or blue, the texture of your skin, the color of your hair, whether you're red-haired and freckle-faced, whether you're dark and swarthy-skinned, whether you are going to be of this or that or the other race, of the three major races of the human family. And all of it is contained in every cell in your body. Whether your child is going to have kinky hair or straight black hair, there are no kinky-haired or blonde-haired Japanese, is contained in every cell of your body. And those cells reproduce cells which are then, as we know, emitted from the body. They exit the body in the reproductive act, and one or another, perhaps more than one, will fertilize a female egg in all mammalia, which is ready to be fertilized by that collection of cells which came from the body of the male. And we all know that because we remember our biology classes. But I want to read just a little bit more from this article and discuss it with you a little bit and then ask some questions. In theory, researchers said, the same techniques could be used to take a cell from an adult human and use the DNA to create a genetically identical human. Well, wonder of all wonders. Seems to me like that's already been done. I grew up with a couple of young men named Ronald and Donald Coates that I could barely tell apart myself. They were identical twins. Both tragically died in an automobile accident shortly after my wife and I were married many, many years ago. But Ron and Don looked so much alike that very few people, if they didn't know them really well, could tell them apart. I imagine their own mother mixed them up from time to time. So they say that techniques could be used, in a laboratory, by scientists, and we're supposed to bow before scientists to use the DNA to create a genetically identical human, a time-delayed twin. That prospect raises the thorniest of ethical and philosophical questions, and there they were this morning, and they were talking about whether or not the clone would have a soul. Well, do you suppose the clone would have a soul? And then it was time for the Catholic priest to pontificate a little about it, and for the Jewish rabbi to pontificate about it, and for the other theologian to say what he thought about it, and about all of these consequences. And all of the networks are now getting all of your theologians and people to be interviewed, to ask about all the consequences of this cloning thing that has gone on. Wilmot's experiment was simple in retrospect. He took a mammary cell from an adult sheep. Doesn't matter whether it was the mammary gland or whether it was from probably a pituitary gland, but he took it from the mammary gland and prepared its DNA, that is, deoxyribonucleic acid, from the little ribbon-like pattern in which the entire genetic code is contained throughout your body. You can cut your finger and leave it on a piece of wood, and weeks or months later, they can take that dried blood and they can identify the DNA and the genetic pattern of the person who left that spot of blood on that piece of wood. And as I say, the way the cells are formed in the body, that pattern of the father or the mother is being produced, and it takes the two of them, two lives, not one life, to suddenly just replicate itself. Although, in biology, as you well remember, maybe you've seen this under an electron microscope, cellular division happens all the time. That is exactly how amoeba and various microbes or bacteria divide. And that is a phenomenal and a fabulous process that is actually one of the greatest proofs against evolution you could ever imagine when you study into cell division. So he took an egg from another sheep. He took the mammary cell from an adult sheep and prepared its DNA so it would be accepted by an egg from another sheep. So instead of it being done normally and naturally, the way the body itself produces the replicating spermatozoon, he did it by taking the DNA out of a cell from another animal. He then removed the egg's own DNA, replaced it with the DNA from the adult sheep by fusing the egg with the adult cell. Oh, well, then he took the cell from an adult sheep and took the egg from another adult sheep, and he put them together. The fused cells, and that's what a fertile egg is when it has been fertilized, carrying the adult DNA, began to grow and divide. Well, amazing. How did they do that? What caused that growth and division? Just like a perfectly normal fertilized egg, to form an embryo. Wilmot implanted the embryo into another ewe. The ewe gave birth to a lamb named Dolly. Why they named it Dolly, I have no idea. Though Dolly seems perfectly normal, at least she does now. We've all seen pictures of Dolly, haven't we? It's been all over the news all the time. It shows this white sheep. DNA tests show that she is the clone of the adult ewe who supplied her DNA. What this will mostly be used for is to produce more health care products. Wilmot told the Press Association of Britain early Sunday, according to Reuters. It will enable us to study genetic diseases for which there is presently no cure and track down the mechanisms that are involved. The next step is to use the cells in culture in the lab and target genetic changes into that culture to actually interfere with the pattern of life and the genetic code in animal and human cells. And they're now debating and talking, and everybody's very alarmed about whether or not they will be able to do this in the human family. Simple though it may be, the experiment to be reported this coming Thursday in the British journal Nature has startled biologists and ethicists. Wilmot said he was interested in the technique primarily as a tool in animal husbandry, but other scientists said it had opened doors to the unsettling prospect that humans could be cloned as well. It's unbelievable, said Dr. Lee Silver, a biology professor at Princeton, who said the announcement had come just in time for him to revise his forthcoming book, so the first chapter will no longer state that cloning is impossible. It basically means there are no limits, Silver said. It means all of science fiction is true. The lengths to which these people go. They said it could never be done, and now here it is done before the year 2000. Dr. Neil First, a professor of reproductive biology and animal biotechnology at the University of Wisconsin, who has been trying to clone cattle, said the ability to clone dairy cattle could have a bigger impact on the industry than the introduction of artificial insemination in the 1950s. And of course, all agronomists and agribusiness people and horticulturalists and people who deal with anything from the reproduction of hard wheat to artificial insemination of cattle know all about selective breeding. And of course, there are human beings walking around whose embryonic beginning occurred in a little dish of fluid, too. That we all know that, that there have actually been implants of fertile eggs put into human wombs where actually the father was a donor and where it was done apart from the normal. Although researchers have created genetically identical animals by dividing embryos very early in their development, there again have created very misleading. They created nothing. They interfered with a process that is found in nature, and that process continued to develop, and then they are called the creator. Silver said no one had cloned an animal from an adult until now. Isn't that interesting how they keep saying that? Cloned an animal from an adult. Where did you come from? From adults? I came from two adults. Do they think they should clone it from a baby? An embryo? Earlier experiments with frogs have become a stock story in high school biology, but the experiments never produced cloned adult frogs. The frogs developed only to the tadpole stage before they died. It's even worse with mammals. Researchers could swap DNA from one fertilized egg to another, but they could go no further. They couldn't even put nuclei from late-stage mouse embryos into early mouse embryos, Silver said, no doubt lamenting. The embryos failed to produce or to develop, and they died. There was a fascinating statement that was made by one of these where they, in the sheep experiment, they thought that perhaps they could contribute to doing away with all forms of human diseases. It's just unbelievable how far this has gone. Wilmot said the method could work for any animal, and he hoped to use it next to clone cattle. And he said he could use many types of cells from adults for cloning, but the easiest would be the so-called stem cells, which give a rise of to a variety of other cells and are present throughout the body. Ah, they are present throughout the body, exactly as I said. From Reuters, from London. Again, I won't read all of this, but Nobel Prize winner Joseph Rotblat, comparing the breakthrough with the creation of the atomic bomb, urged the creation of ethical committees that could stop such frightening projects. Presidents, Nobel laureates, and newspapers all expressed alarm. President Clinton ordered an urgent inquiry into the ethics of cloning. So world leaders and politicians are getting into the act. France's farm minister, Philippe Vasseur, invoked visions of six-legged chickens. Wouldn't that be a lot easier for Pilgrim's Pride? And there was widespread speculation that the process might work just as well on humans, maybe six-legged humans. One last comment. For instance, the Neufeld Council reported last year that using animal organs for human transplants would be ethically acceptable. Well, it has been for a long time. There are people running around with pigs' kidneys in them, as I understand. And I don't know just how many different kinds of vital organs from pigs and other animals have been transplanted into humans. Some of them died, and I understand that some of them lived for a while. Maybe eventually they died. I don't know if they're still running around today with pigs' kidneys or something, but I did hear of that type of bizarre operation in the past. He reported that using animal organs for human transplants would be ethically acceptable as long as care was taken to make sure animal viruses did not infect humans and the animals were not mistreated. You take out its liver, but you don't want to mistreat the poor sheep. You use its kidneys, you take out its heart, but you don't want to mistreat the pig. Some of these articles just absolutely are mind-boggling when you read them carefully, just the way you should read a textbook. Where did the clone come from? Well, it came from an egg which was produced by a sheep, and it came from the DNA of another mature sheep from somewhere in the udder, in the mammary gland. Where did that egg come from in the body of the sheep? Well, it came from the grains and the grass and all the food that the sheep ate. And where did the cell with its DNA come from the other sheep that was taken from a cell in the udder? Well, it came from the grain and the food and the grass that the other sheep ate. Where did the clone grow? It grew in the womb of the mother. What did it become? An embryo. And then later on, gradually through the stages of development, it grew until it was born, like any other sheep, except they just sort of short-circuited or shortcut the method that is used to fertilize the egg. How did the clone get in there? It was implanted. What was implanted? Well, an egg that had been artificially fertilized in a test tube. What fertilized it? Well, the DNA of another sheep. Oh, so then it took two to make one. It was not one that just reproduced again like a photo op, like a flashbulb going off, but it was a normal process of birth that required all the gestation period of a sheep. In Hebrews, the second chapter, and beginning in verse 6, one in a certain place testified, saying, "What is man that you are mindful of him?" Now, you could ask that question, and then for the next several weeks, we could be asking, what is man? And we could talk about evolution versus creation. We could talk about who and what we are and where we came from and all about life and matter and the material creation. But this is really couched in the language that man is so insignificant that what are we and who are we that God should visit us or pay any attention to us? Because as David prayed, "Thou worm Jacob," and said, "I am no man but a worm in your sight," because man is of no consequence in comparison with God. "Thou hast made him," or madest him, "a little lower than the angels." And angels are spirit beings that you and I cannot see. And man is said to be, with his limited creative powers and his virtually boundless imagination, to be just a little lower than the angels. "You crowned him with glory and honor. You did set him over the works of your hands. You put all things in subjection under his feet." And look what man has done with man's modern technology. I never cease to be amazed at my own word processor, my computer that I'm using right now. It just is unbelievable to me. But having been down to the Mercury, Gemini, Thor, Gina shots and seeing the Saturn launches to the moon and standing there with the chains jingling in my pocket and with a microphone, with the earth absolutely shaking with what's called the diamond effect of the roar of a 36-story rocket with over 7 million pounds of thrust hurtling up into the atmosphere to carry man to the moon. I think that was one of the most awestruck moments of my life. I had never been quite so impressed with modern science and technology as I was at that time. Flying 11 different types of jet aircraft, and looking at the systems on everything from the corporate type of aircraft, because I'd never flown larger ones, but all of the incredible technology required to get jet aircraft to fly people comfortably at a 7, 8, 10,000 foot altitude up at 41,000 feet clear across the Atlantic, just absolutely awesome. But there's so much more than that. Whether you go back and you look at Fulton and the development of the steam engine, whether you look at all of the incredible machinery that man has today that is able to produce everything from automobiles to our plastic pencils or the spectacles and eyeglasses that we use, it is unbelievable what man has been able to produce. Now, what has divided man in the past generations, the past centuries, has been primarily three things. It's been race, language, and geographical distribution, the position of the continents and the vastness of the oceans prior to the development of modern transportation divided man. Big, steep mountains divided man, like the Himalayas and the Pamir Knot and the Taurus Mountains. You know about the Khyber Pass. And you know that there can be very different peoples who live only a comparative few miles away from each other, but they're completely divided because one lives on an island and another lives on the other side of a mountain pass. But language divides us. Culture and religion, you can add into all that equation because that has a great deal to do with it as well. Had we not been divided from literally thousands of years ago, God very clearly said that man would have advanced and would have achieved breakthrough in scientific engineering, and now today even in genetic engineering, long before he has done so at the end of this century. Finally, when man discovered radium, Madame Curie, so very, very long ago, discovered that there is a radioactive element that it actually gives off in a half-life of a radioactive element in this earth that is capable of being literally stored and then utilized as a gigantic explosive force. That they found that every atom is like a little universe, that it has a nucleus, and that it has electrons and protons and neutrons and dozens of other electronic particles. Some, they claim, only have a lifespan of 1/1,000,000,000 or whatever particle of a second. So they're not even sure they've identified them. But they have found that each atom is like a miniature universe and is just so much space and electrical energy that is compacted into a certain form when you have a number of atoms that form a molecule. So they now know that all of matter is energy in motion, in rapid, constant motion, but it is compacted and arranged in a certain law-abiding, intricate form. And this really is a proof of God, not some laudatory statement or appreciation of science. But we all are certainly blessed in some ways and yet cursed in many other ways by the advance of science, aren't we? When you stop to think about it, and it could make very interesting conversation over dinner some night, practically every one of the wondrous materials that we know and use and enjoy today, from synthetics and plastics, from all kinds of medicines, if you want to get into that field, have come about as a result of war. Research and development, R&D, are always very, very heightened during a time of war, as all of the intelligentsia and the scientists of nations are pooled together in laboratories and in various groups where they can experiment with this and that. And we know that if the British had not bombed Peenemünde when they did, and if a very brave Norwegian had not actually sent a civilian ferry to the bottom by planting a bomb aboard it where a shipment of deuterium, which is heavy water, that forms a part of an atomic bomb, was on its way from a factory that was going to go over to Peenemünde, and he had to, in a sense, play God, because, and it's covered in a book called A Man Called Intrepid, by placing a bomb aboard a civilian ferry to send that shipment of deuterium to the bottom, and along with it a lot of men, women, and children, in order to prevent Adolf Hitler from getting his hands on the atomic bomb before we did. If he would have done so, and the German scientists were getting close, we would have lost World War II. Many of us would not have been alive, and those who were alive would be speaking German, as would our children. It was a very near thing. But my point is that so much of what has been in everything from communication to transportation, a breakthrough in modern scientific engineering, has been as a result of war. You have made him a little lower than the angels. You crowned him with glory and with honor, and you did set him over the works of your hands. You have put all things in subjection under his feet. For in that he put all in subjection under him, he left nothing that is not put under him. But now we see not yet all things put under him. What is the meaning of all things? Who and what is God? God is creator. Who was the one of the family of the divine sovereign Elohim who became Jesus Christ of the New Testament? I won't wade laboriously through the first chapter of John, but it very plainly says that all things were made by him, and without him was not anything made that was made. He made the worlds. He came into his own, and his own received him not. But as many as received him, to them gave he the power to become the sons of God, even to them that believe on his name. And in the first chapter of Hebrews, it says right across the page, he is in this last day spoken unto us by his Son, whom he has appointed heir of all things, by whom also he made the worlds, who being the brightness of his glory and the express image of his person, and upholding all things by the word of his power. So the sustaining of the powers and energies and forces that actually make up matter depends upon the upholding of the word of the power of the one who produced it and who sustains it and controls it all. We know in the book of Romans that Jesus is called, and we are to become born of God because he is the firstborn among many brethren, and we're to become heirs of God and co-heirs with Christ. And what was Christ in the very beginning? He's called the Logos, the spokesman, the executive member of the God family who did the creating, who said, let there be light. Let the photons and the electrical particles and charges come from the surface of great huge suns and let them bombard the earth. Let the dry land appear. Let the waters bring forth living creatures after their kind. Who took clay, the earth, the elements of this earth, molded it, and then breathed into its nostrils the breath of life, and man became a living nephesh. The word is not soul. The word soul does not connote what the Bible says. Both in the Hebrew, the word nephesh that is used in many, many different ways, as you can see in Bullinger's article on that subject, and in an article that we publish about whether or not we have an immortal soul. It means a living creature. There can even be a dead soul, as we see in the book of Numbers and Leviticus, that a man that touched a dead body, and the word body is soul, was ceremonially unclean until sunset. Look at this then, that we will eventually have all things put under us, but not yet. But we see Jesus, who was made a little lower than the angels for the suffering of death, crowned with glory and honor, that he by the grace of God should taste death for every man. For it became him for whom are all things. For the name and the sake, the purpose and the plan of Jesus Christ, who was the firstborn among all of humankind, everything was produced, designed, and created. For whom are all things? And by or through whom are all things? He thought out, he reasoned out, he planned, and then he created all that is. That boggles your mind. But then a flea cannot understand a dog. He just thinks he's a convenient ride and a square meal. And a dog cannot understand a human, and a human has great difficulty understanding God. Bringing many sons unto glory. That doesn't mean ecstatic feelings of the human emotions. It has to do with the brilliant glory that is that of God Almighty and of Jesus Christ at his right hand. To make the captain of their salvation perfect through sufferings. I want to turn quickly back to the very first book of the Bible, back in the book of Genesis. I won't read all of this, but in the beginning, God, and that word is Elohim, created the heaven and the earth. If you were to read the third paragraph of the lengthy article in the Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown critical and experimental commentary on the subject of Genesis 1 and the word was, you will come to understand that there was a vast, indeterminate period of time during which the continental land masses could have been submerged and then could have reemerged many, many times, and the world could literally be up to 4.5 billion or more years old. This did not happen, what you're reading of here, a mere 6,000 approximately years ago, but long, long before. And the Spirit of God moved upon the face of the waters. Well, at first it said it became, word was, should read became, without form and void, and darkness was upon the face of the deep. All we see is Stygian blackness and tossing waters. And the Spirit of God moved upon the face of the waters, and God said, let there be light. And there was light, meaning that the light now was able to penetrate almost a Venusian atmosphere of thick clouds and shine through onto the earth. You can read the rest of the creation hymn, as it's called, but let's go to verse 26. And Elohim said, let us more than one, make man in our image, after our likeness. If you want to use the word clone, and that would be very ill-advised, God decided to replicate out of the material creation, the so-called dust of the earth, meaning muddy clay that he formed with his own hands, a being that was shaped exactly like God. The Bible says he has a face. It says he has eyes. He has hand. He has arms. He has legs. It shows in the first chapter of the book of Revelation that Jesus Christ has a body that is just like a human body. And we see that throughout the Bible. So then he did reproduce, it says, in the image of God, after our likeness, so God created, verse 27, man in his own image. In the image of God created he him, male and female created he them. How did he create Eve? Oh, he was so far ahead of these scientists in England messing around with sheep that there's simply no comparison. He took a rib right close to man's heart. And he used that rib that contained all the DNA and everything else, and he made a female answering to, exactly compatible with, as a perfect helpmeet for Adam. And he said, this is Isha, for she came from Ish, which is merely the Hebrew word that means man. What did he utilize to do that? Man is discovered that there are approximately, maybe they've discovered one or two more since the time that some of these books were produced, but allegedly there are 103 known chemical elements. We used to have to memorize a table of the major ones when we were in high school, but I think that's long since passed out of education. I don't know whether they do it or not now. Some of them, briefly, I can't read them all, are actium, aluminum, you'll recognize a lot of them, antimony, barium, beryllium, calcium, carbon. Carbon is everywhere present. You want to get pure carbon, go home and take some white sugar, put it in a frying pan, turn up the heat to hot, just sprinkle the white sugar there, let it absolutely cook and burn, turn on the fan, and when it's all burnt, you got a little pile of black ash. That is pure carbon, found in every kind of a form from some of the most powerful materials that have a greater tensile strength than steel, down to the soft kind of an actual lubricant that is so soft that it is used in machinery. And then what is it? I don't know. They just call it carbon. It's just something that is found in its hardest form as a brilliant diamond. Pure carbon. That's what a diamond is. And in its softest form, a lubricant. Carbon, where'd it come from? Did man produce it? Cobalt, chromium, copper, fluorine, gallium, gold, helium, hydrogen, iron, lead, lithium, mercury, magnesium, oxygen, palladium, platinum, radium, silicon, silver, sulfur, titanium, xenon, zinc. I won't read 103, but that's what we're composed of. We are made up of all of these elements, and each one of them is an incredibly intricate, law-abiding, wondrous thing to look at under an electron microscope to see that each one has its own properties, each one has its own pattern, each one is completely different from the other. And together it takes them all, the chemical elements of earth and matter, to make up man. Now, so much for the idea that by man short-circuiting or shortcutting the normal process of the production of cells in the testes of a ram and taking it instead from the udder of a mature female and placing it in an egg, and successfully having it be fertilized and produce not another male, but a little embryo, microscopic embryo, in the womb of a sheep, and they are gurgling and chirping and chortling and praising and going crazy on the media, acting like this man over there in England has done something that only God could do. It's amazing when you look at the media. When I heard that this morning, my wife and I had to turn it off. We listened to a little of that debate. Joey Chen on CNA had said, do you suppose Jesus was a clone? That did it for me. End of newscast. These people bow before science like they thought science was God. Verse 18 of chapter 2, the eternal God said, "It is not good that the man should be alone. I will make an help meet," or exactly fitting, "for him." And out of the ground the eternal God formed every beast of the field. Now, as I asked earlier, how did that little embryo grow in the womb of the adult female ewe? By what the ewe ate. And it ate grass and grains and drank water and ate things that came out of the ground. And as its body and its stomach and its intestinal tract assimilated all of these elements from the ground, and its umbilical passed through the bloodstream into a growing embryo, the little embryo was gradually being formed out of the ground. Guess who takes all the credit? Well, you know, science does. The media hype. The sheep. Dolly, Dolly. Maybe we can use your liver, your heart, your kidneys, and your vital organs. No. Some of these articles absolutely are contradictory from one paragraph to another one. And man is not God, and man cannot reproduce an adult from an adult without going right back to the same process by which every single one of us got here, which is beginning with an egg which has been fertilized, placed in the womb of a mother. So the next time you hear somebody say something about clones, don't try to imagine a million Saddam Husseins marching across Saudi Arabia. And remember that Adolf Hitler tried it, although what he was doing was genetic engineering, trying to produce a super race by culling out of the German race the tallest, blondest, most wonderfully proportioned men and women, and actually putting them together in camps and having them breed and produce children which were very beautiful and tall and blonde. Why? Because they looked just like their parents. Selective breeding has been known from the time of Jacob and Laban, when he put down what really were cattle guards in front of the little water troughs to keep the strongest of the cattle together to build a herd for himself. Science is not God. God is God. And if you look into the 11th chapter of the book of Genesis and see how he confounded and confused their language and scattered them abroad, because at that time he said, "This they begin to do, and now nothing that they have imagined will be withheld from them." And God divided all the people, the tongues, the languages, and the races at the Tower of Babel to prevent just exactly what man is now dreaming of doing, genetic engineering, and actually trying to avoid the consequences of disease by walking around with animals' organs in our bodies and producing the bizarre six-legged chicken.